Welcome into another edition of Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus, filling in for Kevin Swanson. As you might have seen in the news this past Friday, the Trump administration implemented the Protect Life Rule, and it is a major step forward to help ensure the safety of more unborn babies. To describe it, to talk about it, and to really plunge into what the Trump administration has been doing on behalf of the babies since he was sworn into office is Alan Parker. He's the president of the Justice Foundation in San Antonio, Texas, and also oversees themoraloutcry.com, which we'll touch on in just a moment. But first, Alan, tell me about the Trump administration's hope of implementing the Protect Life Rule through the Department of Health and Human Services.
Well, this is another one of President Trump's amazing pro-life initiatives. He's already demonstrated to me that he's the most pro-life president that we've had in recent history, even more so than Ronald Reagan, who was great in principle and led the way, but didn't really have many accomplishments as a pro-life president. But now President Trump is defunding Planned Parenthood to a very significant degree. And this is a great first step to lop off about $70 to maybe $170 million that would otherwise go through family planning services that the government funds that would go to Planned Parenthood. And he has proposed regulations to eliminate giving that money to organizations that perform abortions. That obviously would include Planned Parenthood, since they're the largest abortion provider in America.
So to be clear, Trump's Protect Life Rule will prevent Title X programs from conducting, counseling for, or referring for abortions.
That's correct. And so you can do other kinds of family planning and medicines, including contraceptives and such, but not what goes beyond contraception prevents a human being from coming to existence. Abortion kills a human being after they've come into existence.
Okay, let's try to understand the bigger picture. The bigger picture is every year Planned Parenthood receives $500 million of taxpayer money, and they oversee 300,000 plus abortions annually. I know that there have been multiple votes taken in the House and the Senate. President Trump is ready to sign the bill into law to defund Planned Parenthood. Why has this not happened, especially with Republican majorities? A lot of us pro-lifers are getting frustrated out here.
The frustration should be taken out on two Republicans, Murkowski of Alaska and Collins of Maine, because they were the only Republicans that voted against it. And if you only have 51 Republicans and you lose two, that drops you to 49 and you no longer have a majority of Republicans. But I would suggest don't be mad at the 49 Republicans who were willing to vote for it. Get more Republicans in office if you want them, or call the offices of Collins of Maine and Murkowski of Alaska and tell them how you feel about the issue of defunding Planned Parenthood. We shouldn't force people who hate abortion to pay for it by their tax dollars. It's not all Republicans. It's 2 out of 51. And when you lose 2 out of 51, 49 is not a majority.
Well put. Now, let's talk about the Supreme Court. President Trump nominated and got confirmed Neil Gorsuch. By all understanding, he is going to be a plus in the pro-life column as it relates to the Supreme Court. Is that fair?
I think that's certainly the hope, and every indication is already that he has been a strong conservative constitutionalist and a pretty courageous judge who I believe would have the courage to reverse the Supreme Court decisions in Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton.
We know that there are three or four Supreme Court justices who are getting quite up there in age. Anthony Kennedy, the swing vote, Ruth Bader Ginsburg in particular. Anthony Kennedy has been flirting most recently in the last year, year and a half with retirement. Do you think Anthony Kennedy will be the next Supreme Court justice to retire?
I do think he will be the next justice to retire. He has indicated it. And I think he might have even given the president some indication that he will do so, because last November, Fox News reported he was going to announce a retirement after Thanksgiving. That did not happen, but there were five new names added by the president to the short list for the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's a pretty strong indication that the president was considering the next nominee. I would urge people to pray for the pro-life issue and for the Supreme Court to come to a realization that there's far better ways to move our nation forward than killing children.
President Donald Trump is unique in many ways. From a pro-lifer's perspective, unique in that he actually gave us, during the election campaign, prior to his having secured a victory in November of 2016, an actual list of 11 conservative pro-life Supreme Court possibilities that he gleaned from his conversations and the research at both the Heritage Foundation, a conservative think tank, and the Federalist Society. First of all, what was your reaction when that first came out and he announced it, I believe, on the Hannity show on Fox News Channel?
I think it was a wonderful thing. I think that was evidence of God's hand in the election, one of many, because no Republican president had ever gone that far and released a list of staunch constitutional judges before that.
Do you think if President Trump does put forward another pro-life Supreme Court nominee, that we will have the votes in order to get that next nominee confirmed by a majority of the Senate?
That somewhat depends on who the nominee might be. I think one of the best nominees might be Amy Barrett Coney, currently on the Seventh Circuit. She was on the short list. She was a Notre Dame law professor. She got confirmed recently to the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. She's a very strong candidate. She's a woman. She might appeal to Murkowski and Collins to support, even though she has a very good record on the pro-life issue also.
When we come back from this break, we'll talk with Alan Parker, president of the Justice Foundation based in San Antonio, Texas, about themoraloutcry.com. Make sure to look up that website. We'll talk about it in detail when we return. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson. Would love to hear from you by way of email, adam@theworldview.com. That's adam@theworldview.com.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith, and it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson. And I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case. A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent? The American Pilgrims, and the Battle for King's Mountain. How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
Welcome back to the second half of Generations Radio. I'm Adam McManus, in for Kevin Swanson, who's traveling throughout Africa, as we continue our conversation with Alan Parker, the president of the Justice Foundation based in San Antonio, Texas. We've talked about the Protect Life rule that President Trump implemented this past Friday that would prevent Title X programs from conducting, counseling for, or referring for abortions. Some say it will deny upwards of $60 to $170 million in taxpayer money to Planned Parenthood. We've touched on Neil Gorsuch's appointment and confirmation to the Supreme Court and the possibility that Anthony Kennedy is next likely to retire from the Supreme Court, giving President Trump a chance to appoint another pro-lifer. But let's take a step back for a moment, Alan, and give our listeners, if you would, across America and around the world who listen by way of generations.org/radio, to the vision of the Moral Outcry, and they can find the details at the website themoraloutcry.com.
Thank you very much, Adam. I think your listeners will be very, very fascinated by this talk, by the story of Melinda Thibault, who is the visionary founder of the Moral Outcry petition, the petition to the United States Supreme Court itself to stop abortion and protect the generations of children that not only are being killed, but who are being prevented from getting married and having other children. So it's generations of children that abortion wipes out every time that single human life is taken through abortion. But the Moral Outcry is a petition to the United States Supreme Court asking them to reverse their cases. It came through prayer by the prayer director at the International House of Prayer for the life issue. And as she was praying one day, the idea came to write a petition to the Supreme Court of the United States, sort of like William Wilberforce did to Parliament. And she contacted us and said, can we do this? And I sort of thought about it a while and prayed intensely, and I began to see that we could do this because we have the First Amendment right as American citizens to petition our government for redress of grievances. That's in the Constitution. That's why you can lobby Congress and the legislature. That's normally how we use that right. But in this case, we're complaining against a crime against humanity that occurred when the Supreme Court decided Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton, the companion case. I've had the great honor of representing Norma McCorvey, who was the Roe of Roe v. Wade, and Sandra Cano, who was Doe of Doe v. Bolton, in their efforts to reverse those two cases. They came to believe that abortion was a crime against humanity. It was wrong, and it hurt women. We tried to take their cases back to the Supreme Court. They didn't rule against them, but they declined to take the case. So we have to continue the fight. And this petition has five major reasons to the Supreme Court why we should move America forward and beyond abortion to a new day of justice and help for women. We send it to the Supreme Court because the legislature didn't create the crime. The states didn't do it. It was the Supreme Court. And the way we do that is through amicus curiae briefs before the Supreme Court, in particular cases that deal with abortion. There's a number of cases we could talk about later across the country, any one of which could be the case that reverses Roe v. Wade.
One of those is the heartbeat bill, and I'm looking at the actual PDF of the petition that people can access for themselves and actually add their name to it as well at the website themoraloutcry.com. Reason number one, the cases have not been accepted by scholars, referring to Roe v. Wade and Doe versus Bolton. The cases have not been accepted by scholars, judges, and the American people as witnessed to by the fact that these cases are still the most intensely controversial cases in American history and right now. Number two, new scientific advances have demonstrated since 1973 that life begins at the moment of conception and the child in a woman's womb is a human being. Number three, scientific evidence and personal testimonies document the massive harm that abortion causes to women. Number four, the laws in all 50 states have now changed through safe haven laws to eliminate all burden of child care from women who do not want to care for a child. And finally, five, public attitudes favoring adoption have created a culture of adoption in America, with many families waiting long periods of time to adopt newborn infants. These are five persuasive reasons, aren't they, Alan?
They are, and they're also legally permissible reasons under the law of precedent why a Supreme Court decision should be overturned, including that first one that you put down. Here's another evidence of God's hand in the election to me. In a book that came out in 2016, co-authored by Justice Gorsuch, who at that time was just on a court of appeals level, in the book called The Law of Precedent, Section 47D, it says one of the reasons for overturning a Supreme Court decision is if it has been met with protest, dissatisfaction, or severe criticism. So his own book, with a foreword by Justice Stephen Breyer of the Supreme Court, says severe criticism is one of the reasons you overturn a Supreme Court decision. And this petition, which you outlined, anyone can sign it, and the Justice Foundation, who I represent, and I'm a lawyer admitted before the bar of the Supreme Court, we will file your name in the annals of the Supreme Court in our briefs, saying that you believe abortion is a crime against humanity, and then arguing in the briefs why abortion should be banned and ultimately the cases should be overturned.
And how many people have signed that petition so far?
Well, the first brief we filed had 57,000 names in it. The second brief we filed had 84,000 names in it. We're hoping for the next one to have over 100,000 by the 4th of July, and over 1 million is what we'd like to have within the next 1 to 2 years when the ultimate case comes to the Supreme Court and we have one more justice on the court.
Let me mention the website again, themoraloutcry.com. TheMoralOutcry.com. I hope each and every one of the 100,000 folks that listen to the Generations Radio, that you'll take the time to sign that petition tonight before your head hits the pillow. Now, Alan, let's talk about the heartbeat bill of Iowa in particular. It passed. It was signed into law by the governor there. We are thrilled with it. It says basically that after 6 or 7 weeks when a baby's heartbeat can be detected, that baby is indeed protected. This is going to take aim at Roe v. Wade itself once it is no doubt challenged by the pro-aborts like Planned Parenthood, and the possibility of Roe v. Wade itself being overturned because of the Iowa heartbeat bill once we get another pro-life Supreme Court justice put on the bench by President Trump and confirmed by 51 Republican senators. It seems pretty likely, doesn't it?
It's extremely likely that that case will go all the way to the Supreme Court. That's almost a certainty. Now, whether they'll take it or not, then once it gets there, that's up to them and the Lord's timing. But I want to also mention this, that one of the projects of the Justice Foundation is Operation Outcry, in which we've collected over 4,500 testimonies of women hurt by abortion. That's point number three under the petition. And all 4,500 of those testimonies were put into the legislative history and were part of the discussion of that heartbeat bill. So one of the reasons Iowa will defend it in court is because of reason number three. Abortion hurts women, and Iowa, now like all the other states, say to a woman, don't kill your baby. If you can't take care of the child or you don't want to, you can simply give the baby to us, and the state will take care of the baby until it's adopted. And there's actually 1 million people in the United States every year waiting to adopt a healthy newborn infant, which is mostly what we're killing in abortion.
Alan, I have had the great privilege of hearing you speak in person. You and I both have the same hometown of San Antonio, Texas. I've been to a number of your galas and have actually emceed some of them over the years. And one of the wonderful works that you are doing, in addition to all that we've already mentioned, is coming alongside a woman, typically a younger woman, perhaps even a minor daughter, who is feeling pressured by parents, a boyfriend, somebody in their life to get an abortion against their will. Speak to that issue and how often it happens and what you at the Justice Foundation have been able to do to help people in that situation.
Once you make abortion legal, it opens up the door for other people to force a woman to have an abortion to solve what they think of as their problem. So right now, there are thousands and thousands of forced abortions going on across America all over, and those are forced, coerced, or unduly pressured. They fall into three major types. The most common and the one we deal with and the one we can stop easily, and anyone listening to this, if they'll go to our Center Against Forced Abortion website and get these legal documents, anyone can stop these because it's illegal in every state to force a woman to have an abortion. A voluntary abortion is legal if it's done in the proper way and time, but an involuntary abortion is always illegal in some manner, depending on how it's done. Number one is adult parents forcing a minor girl to have an abortion. Number two is the man, the father of his child, forcing his wife or sexual partner to abort his child because he didn't want a child. Number three is human trafficking or prostitution, and the pimp is forcing the girl to abort someone's child because he doesn't want her out of business. The last one usually involves anti-trafficking or police, but the first two, parents or men, we have legal tools that can stop 90 to 95% of them, and we have 3,000 attorneys across the nation who go to court to stop that, particularly the parents forcing a minor girl. The Dear Parent letter on our website at thejusticefoundation.org can be given to any parent who's forcing a daughter and using illegal means. Here's one of the most common, for example. If you don't have this abortion, I'm kicking you out of the house. That violates the duty under the family law of every state to care for a child. You can't kick them out on the street, but that's what parents threaten to do. Another one is, if you don't have this abortion, I'm going to beat you with an inch of your life. That's threats of child abuse. That's illegal. A third is a little more subtle, perhaps, but it says, I don't care what you say, I'm going to take you down there and you're getting this abortion. The parents may be forcing her so strongly that she signs the consent form, but it's not a voluntary abortion. Coerced consent is no consent, and the doctor can be liable for a battery, medical negligence. The doctors could lose their license for this. In some states, about 37 states, it's actually a fetal homicide. It's murder for anyone but the mother and the abortionist with her voluntary consent to kill a child in the womb. We allow the abortionist to do it because of Roe v. Wade, but anybody else that involuntarily kills a child in the womb is guilty of fetal homicide in about 37 states, including Texas, where I'm based.
So tell me, how many women or minor girls or those in the midst of sex trafficking have you been able to help from being pressured to have an abortion against their will?
Well, we estimate conservatively that it's between 1,000 to 2,000 babies a year are being saved. We say estimate because we distribute the material widely, primarily to about 3,000 crisis pregnancy centers across the nation. If they only use it once a year, that's 1,000 a year. Two would be 2,000 a year. And we go to these conferences and train. Heartbeat, NIFLA, CareNet are the three major ones with about 3,000 centers altogether. We always hear, thank you for your material. We've used it five times this year already. Many of them have adopted it where they give it to every single one of their clients, even if they don't know they're being coerced. Because sometimes the women go in, they see the sonogram, oh, I'm going to keep my baby. And then they go home to either parents or a boyfriend who says, you're not keeping this baby, I don't care what you think, and begins to use the illegal methods of forcing her to break her will. The question is, whose decision is it? I'll give you just a quick story. I'll use up a made-up name for the girl, Sally. We had been trying to talk with her to get the letter to the parents or to go to court on her behalf, and she kept saying, no, I think I can talk my mom out of it. Well, I hadn't heard from her, but she had told me where the abortion was going to be on Saturday morning. I went down there and said, Sally, is that you? Sally, is that you? About the third girl. She said, yes, I'm Alan Parker. I'm the lawyer you've been talking with. Can I help you? And she said, I don't want this abortion, but I can't fight my mother anymore. And right then her mother came out and she said, what do you mean? I said, ma'am, I've represented too many women hurt by abortion. I don't want your daughter to be hurt. You don't want that. And she said, I think I ought to call the police. Come on with me. And she dragged her daughter into the clinic, and it hit me. I ought to call the police. And I did, and I called the police. I said, I think there's a forced abortion occurring. The girl said, I don't want this abortion, but I can't fight my mother. and this is a forced abortion. The police came out and stopped that abortion.
Wow.
I said, here I am. And so you can do this even at the sidewalk. The easiest thing is the letter. We have a letter to police that says, if you don't stop this, you can be held liable for violating the girl's constitutional rights. Unfortunately, many times the police say, you have to do what your parents tell you to do. That's normally good advice for teenagers, and if there's teenagers listening, honor your father and mother, but not in this case. It'd be like if your parents said, we need food, go steal something from the neighbors. This is the child's constitutional right. Even under Roe v. Wade, it is the minor woman's decision to make it in a decision called Bilotti v. Baird. They extended the right to make the choice even to teenagers. We have a Dear School Counselor letter that tells them, because the girls will often go to the counselor and say, my mom's making me have an abortion. What can I do? Well, you got to do what your mom says. Or maybe the counselor says, well, that's the best thing for you. This 11th Circuit Court of Appeals decision, the counselors said, you've got to have an abortion. You've got the future before you. You can't have this. Don't tell your parents. We'll raise the money. We'll get the abortion for you. And they did all that. The boy and the girl then felt horrible that they killed their own child, and they sued the school counselors, and the court said that is enough to be a violation of the constitutional right of the girl to make her own choice. You coerced her. You put undue pressure on her and told her not to tell her parents about this, and that was enough to be a constitutional violation, subjecting them to 1983 damages claim.
Tell me where people can get these documents if they're concerned that someone might be pressure to get a forced abortion.
The best place for that is thejusticefoundation.org. The Justice Foundation on our website says forced abortions. Click on there. I'd like to say to the high school students, you might be the one who could save a life and save a baby from a forced abortion. You might be the one who hears something like, hey, Sally's pregnant and her parents are forcing her to have an abortion. You can speak up and say, that's illegal. I'm going to get that Dear Parent letter and give it to Sally and give it to her parents and maybe show it to the school counselor too, because it's illegal to force a girl to have an abortion in every state. It's her constitutional right to do so, and you can get that Dear Parent letter and save a life.
In conclusion, Alan, tell me about the scripture that has most moved you about God's perspective on the sin of abortion.
In Proverbs, God says that he hates the shedding of innocent blood. Abortion is the shedding of innocent blood. That baby's blood is innocent. One of the scriptures that's really motivating me this year is Isaiah 45. In that scripture, it talks about Cyrus. And many people have sort of called Donald Trump a Cyrus-style president, particularly since he's just established the American embassy in Jerusalem, protecting the Jewish people like Cyrus did. And it also says in there that it's pro-life. Woe to you who say to a mother, what are you begetting? Why are you bringing a child into this world? Woe to those who say to a father, why are you bringing a child into this world? The whole passage is very prophetic, and he is the 45th president, and this is the 45th year of Roe v. Wade. And I have been in the Supreme Court many times this year, and literally I felt the presence of the Lord there. And we're seeing more people praying in and for the Supreme Court than ever before. And the election of Donald Trump was an amazing thing that God is doing to end the covenant with death.
Alan Parker has been my guest, president of the Justice Foundation. The two critical websites you need to check out: themoraloutcry.com, if you'd like to add your name to the petition that will be given to the Supreme Court itself this coming July, indicating your outrage with Roe v. Wade, themoraloutcry.com. And if you'd like to learn more about the Justice Foundation or help a woman or a minor girl who's being pressured to have an abortion that she does not want to have, go to the website, thejusticefoundation.org, thejusticefoundation.org. I'm Adam McManus, inviting you to give me feedback about today's show through my email, adam@theworldview.com. That's adam@theworldview.com. Learn more about me and my background at my website, adammcmanus.net. That's MCMANUS, adammcmanus.net. In for Kevin Swanson as we lay down a vision for the next generation.